when we're talking about data protection and the intricacies that come with respect to that, there is certainly one go-to soul that we've featured regularly on both the Midweek Drive for Siren 107.3 FM and indeed Southside Broadcast. Of course, it is the legend that is Susan Singleton. Susan, I take it you are there now. How are you?
I certainly am. I'm very well indeed.
Excellent. So great stuff. I mean, you know, every time, and you must sort of sometimes feel, oh, right, well, we've put that to bed now, we've sorted that thing through. But it seems that the complications and the intricacies, as I mentioned, of the Data Protection Act and so on seem to constantly be sort of changing and vacillating in all sorts of ways here. Do you sometimes sort of think, well, this is great, this is good news, more, bring it on, etc.? Or do you sometimes think, wouldn't it be a lot easier if we just went back to paper and pen and just had standard photocopies, etc., as opposed to all this digital technology and so on?
Well, there would certainly be much less chance of disclosures if we were back to paper and pen, but I think the advantages of internet and social media, etc., are so high that I wouldn't really want that back to paper and pen.
That's very true, and certainly from the radio broadcasting point of view, I mean, shifting from sort of the days of analog tape where you'd have whole boxfuls of the things to a nice little teeny-weeny memory stick is a lot easier from that point of view. Of course, these days there are clouds as well, but let's move on. Key thing we wanted to speak to you briefly about today was this whole notion about giving out people's addresses without that sort of information being passed through, specifically with respect to government departments sometimes actually doing this as well from that point of view. What's the scenario with respect to that? Because one's initial gut feeling is this is outrageous, but...
It certainly is. I think the main problem we have is people want to be nice to other people. So if someone rings you up and they want a favour and you're working for your employer and they're saying, oh, could you just get me the information on the file? They don't always think sensibly. So what they should be saying is, this is not Mr. Jones, it's Mrs. Jones. And they're separate people and they have no entitlement to each other's information. That's what they should be thinking. But people aren't always like that. They're, as I say, they're quite nice. So they think, oh, well, okay, I'll be helpful. Yes, it's only her husband. Of course, he won't mind her having that or the other way around. So that seems to be at the root of the problem. It's not so much we don't have good systems in place, because most companies and government departments do have data protection policies and they train people, etc. It's trying to make sure that everybody, every minute of the day, is careful about confidentiality.
Mm. It's really interesting because, again, wearing my academic hat for a moment, we introduced at Lincoln a series of online tutorials and packages which all staff have to actually take. Needless to say, you'd be delighted, Susan, that I scored 100% because I said I put it all down to the inspiration by your good self, Susan, in terms of things like that. But there is that notion about people can actually call up, they can claim to be X, Y, or Z for a particular person, they might be have a relationship or an ex-relationship with the individual concerned. You really can't do it, no matter how nice and polite they actually happen to be. And it's not a case of being awkward or a job's worth or things from that point of view. You have to not necessarily refer it upwards, but in the case of certainly institutions and universities, etc., refer it to the designated member of staff responsible for data protection and information from that point of view. And even then, obviously, be very wary about giving out that information, particularly over a phone line or anyway, really, emails as well.
That's right. You even get some scammers who pretend to be women when they're men, and they can be very, very good at this sort of thing. I think it's terribly important that organisations have systems in place. We've all been annoyed. I called HMRC last night, and it took a long time to get through, and I had to give my, postcode, name and address, tax code and everything, and I got through, and I suppose we accept that, because that means that, only I am going to be talking to them about my tax affairs, not somebody else. But a lot of organisations don't do that. Your local... Even doctors' surgeries aren't always as careful as they should be, but they should really be doing what the banks do and getting all, and the HMRC, they should be getting your address and as many as, ideally some kind of code number, not just your date of birth, which might be in the public domain.
And indeed, passwords and details from that point of view as well. It's interesting that, just on a generic base, I find that the relative I knew nothing about in Nigeria who is asking for some help with respect to transfer of funds seems to have actually moved recently to Egypt, which is interesting. But sure, well, that's the line for things. I still can't actually recall. I don't intend to actually send any details to this person, despite the fact that it would seem it would be very worth my while to do so. But
yes, I get an awful lot of those. Must be a lot of people sitting out there just trying to persuade us all to get various details. I get quite a lot from supposedly from PayPal. I got one this morning which was relating to Twitter and said someone was illegally using my Twitter account. It was spam. It was trying to get me to key in my details and hand them over. I think the banks repeat again and again. They will never, ever ask you for over the telephone or by email for you to key in your confidential details. They'll never, ever do it. No matter how much it looks like a legitimate email from NatWest or something, it just won't be.
Yeah, indeed. The same with all of the high street banks and so on and so forth. Journalism, well aware of that. Obviously, I teach a number of journalism students within the day-to-day routine. Clearly, big question marks being raised in the recent Leveson Committee report, whether you're seeing Rupert Murdoch as a latter-day Citizen Kane in his own sort of latter days and so on. There's another example where, obviously, when you're looking for information and you're working through that, there is the notion, as we've said before, of a right to know, right of interest and so on. But again, you need to be a little bit cautious in terms of what goes out into that public domain and so on.
I think people do. They have to be so careful. And I think people are not always aware that the dots might be joined. And what I mean by that is you might be posting on one forum on the internet about your interest in, I don't know, knitting, and on another about your sexual interests, and another somewhere else. And increasingly, the various forms in which people communicate, Twitter, Facebook, etc., they're trying to join together so that you would be connected. And if you were wanting to have a sort of separate, almost secret life in relation to your interest in hunting or animal rights or something, you might find that's quite hard to preserve because of the way the connections are operated by those organisations.
It's certainly, I think, an application of what's referred to as jigsaw identification, where you put the bits and pieces together and suddenly it's actually there. And that was actually originally arranged as, if memory serves, for the sort of legal criminal sort of cases, etc., that press and people are actually allowed to report at any particular time. Okay, so let's just look at worst case scenario here in terms of information does get out. A government department does actually issue details to an ex partner or something from that point of view. Is there any right of redress, or is it just a case of a shrug of the shoulders and say, well, never mind, perhaps we'll get it right in the next life?
There is a right. There's a right in the Data Protection Act 1998. There's a right to sue for damages, so you could take a legal claim, you could go to the local county court, you could bring a small claim to recover money for any financial loss you've suffered. And it also says in the Data Protection Act that if you've suffered financial loss, you can also claim for damage to injury to feelings and that kind of thing as well. And some people's data record has been destroyed financially, so it looks like they're a bad credit risk through actions that are wrong in this area, and that's led them to bring quite big compensation claims. Mm. The main problem I have is that most people whose data is breached, they are annoyed and it's upset them, and they think they're going to get lots of money, and usually they don't because they can't prove a specific financial loss. Mm. It might be that the consequence of that disclosure means they've got to change addresses, and that might cost them something. You know, it's possible those sort of things could be recovered. And you can always make a claim also to the Information Commissioner's Office, and then you don't have to sue. You won't get compensation, but you might get some redress, or the information might have to be stopped being disseminated if it had got out there to people that it shouldn't have done. And that's another route. So you can either go to court or you can go to the Information Commissioner. And certainly writing to the people concerned is essential, so you've got it on record, not just by telephone, what you want them to do, which might be, please put a really clear note on the file so this never happens again. Mm. And that kind of thing.
Indeed. And in a world, as we mentioned earlier, where we seem to be almost drowning in a sea of social networking sites, websites, you've got your LinkedIns, you've got your Twitters, you've got your Googles, etc. You've got even this notion of Google taking over the world with respect to information routines. It always pays to actually have those precautions available and possibly even just adopt the policies that some of our more chronologically gifted listeners, and including myself on this particular instance, might sort of think, well, actually, you know, when we were children, we were told don't talk to strangers, you know, avoid those. So same thing with respect to the internet, to the virtual world, etc. I mean, obviously, you can technically sort of introduce this, but there's a formality that's actually there, and I think you need to adhere to those principles in cyberspace as much as perhaps meat space, to use that dreadful term that I think cyber geeks like to refer to the notion of virtual reality and reality as we exist.
Yeah, that's very, very wise. I think particularly parents should make that clear to children as well. You know, we tell them not to speak to strangers on the street, but it would be the same on the internet as well. I'm not saying you can't make very good friends online, but people need to be terribly careful. The other point to bear in mind is there is now picture searching on Google. So if you have any of your photographs that you might be sending to people, and you may not want that person to know your identity at that point, for example, it's always worth just testing that particular photograph, loading it up and seeing, does it take does it take that image to your website, other public details about you? Because you might think a photograph is anonymous, but it actually often isn't these days, because you've posted it somewhere with your name. Just be careful about that.
Thankfully, we can say that all the Southside Broadcasting photographs on Facebook.com are there in full public order, and you can have a look at them, whether you want to actually see BAFTA award-winning directors driving teddy bear trains or anything else. It's all there in full force. Susan, it's been splendid as ever, just getting a flavour of wonderful, a mixture of common sense and very sort of effective advice in your usual articulate manner. Two final questions for your good self. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us once again here on the Midweek Drive and also Southside Broadcasting?
Very much indeed.
So can we look forward to hopefully connecting with you again, hopefully in the very near future? We'll have a few more co-presenters around who I know are fascinated by this whole never-ending, it would seem, story of data protection and the ongoing sort of changes and things within it.
You certainly can.
Susan Singleton, we salute you. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you.